Welcome to the Ask Brian Podcast Radio Show, where you'll hear from some of the most successful founders and CEOs of businesses and startups, sharing their best advice for success and even some stories on how their mistakes actually make them even more successful. Now, here are your hosts, Brian and Tracy.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. You're listening to the Ask Brian Radio Show on KHS 1220 and 98.1 FM every Thursday, 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific time. Well, each week we have a show we've been doing over 7 years since January of 2017. It's a business show, and we try to help people out with business issues. We try to solve business problems by bringing on a guest that has some business knowledge about either a specific category like Facebook or financial planning or marketing or funnel building, or we try to take somebody else on that has started a company from scratch and made it into something. Why? Because we're trying to help you learn something about business. But people constantly ask us, why is Brian, because it's called Ask Brian Radio Show, why is it spelled with an E? Because everyone I knew when I was growing up was spelled B-R-I-A-N, B-R-Y-A-N. No one spelled it with an E, unless it was the pub down the street, the Irish pub. And we'd go to, let's go to O'Brien's. They have a great beer on tap. All right. But not everybody's there. So Tracy, my co-host, she's, what do you call yourself regarding ease, Tracy?
It's not as fun as I have to call myself the resident E expert. I like it better when you claim and announce that I'm the resident E expert. I mean, come on. It's no fun if you call yourself your own guru.
Well, not if you have a big ego, which also is an ego.
Well, apparently I must have an extremely large ego.
Extremely is another
topic for another day.
We like to use the letter E, I see, on this show. All right. So, but people want to know, Tracy, why Brian is spelled with an E. So you've come up with a couple of these things over the years, and people want to really know why Brian is spelled with an E. So let's explain one reason, and we'll go through all them all.
Okay. Well, our very most important E is, of course, our engineer. Hey, Jen.
Hi, Tracy. Thank you.
Wow.
And I know you know this already, but today, estrogen wins. You're outnumbered, Peter.
Oh, that's
that
true.
That doesn't matter because my ego and testosterone will outmaneuver.
It will. But you know what, Tracy? I realized last week that there's a really great little trick that only I have control over. Oh. Since I'm running the board, I have access and control over his microphone. So I don't know why this didn't hit me before.
Oh, but you know, and that's why you are the extraordinary engineer. Yes, you are. And getting better every episode.
It just takes one little button.
We're getting another E there.
I certainly know how to hit buttons.
Well, in all seriousness, though, this show is about education. And would it be possible if we didn't have the opportunity to interview such amazing experts? And it's always important to just pause for a moment, take a breath, and think, okay, well, yes, Tracy is a self-proclaimed E expert, but that doesn't necessarily, well, you know what? Actually, I do have 10,000 hours in E's accumulated, so I am officially legit.
I also think you took some caffeine. I think you took some caffeine, too, but go ahead.
No, I didn't take any caffeine. This is me natural. I don't take caffeine. You don't want me on caffeine, believe me. Okay, so again, in all seriousness, to be an expert by most people's definition is based on accumulating, investing, and basically spending 10,000 hours in your business category or niche. And that takes typically around, if you do normal math, which is 40 hours a week on roughly 50, 52 weeks a year, then that would take you about 5 years. However, we know entrepreneurs, which is a big E in our show, spend way more than 40 hours a week launching and growing a business. So they probably cover that in 3 years. And so, you know, we are really fortunate, though, on the Ask Brian Radio Show that we have experts that have just 10x that in some cases and just multiple, multiple years of of becoming experts in their fields. And so excited to introduce you to our expert today and how much she is an expert in her specific niche for sure. And I don't know, like, I feel like that Peter's kind of getting more empathetic as the shows go on, but he could just be masquerading. I don't know. You'd have to tell me, Peter, are you feeling empathetic? Or are you still just like, huh? What does that mean?
Huh? What does that mean?
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay, well, we'll just move on past that one. And
I was just falling asleep. That's why.
What? Yes, that's my southern way of saying I'm ignoring you. We also bring a lot of energy to this show, a lot of energy and a lot of enthusiasm, because Peter is often and always
excited.
That's when we should mute the microphone.
That's painful. So. I know.
Well,
all right, Peter. And then our one final big extravaganza for an E is?
They say this about grease lightning. What about grease lightning? What is it?
It's electrifying, and we think we are too.
Now, if our guest hasn't said, what did I get myself into? Why am I here? Or I'm gone. Courtney,
or where's
there?
The exit?
Are you there?
I am here.
We don't believe in fun on our show. We're an anti-fun show. So
clearly.
Anyway, a couple questions for you, Courtney. What is basically is your background? I saw somewhere in the biography, planology or whatever. I don't even know what that is. Is that like a plant thing? Are you like a vegetarian? What is that?
So I've spent the last 20 years working with employer-sponsored retirement plans, like 401ks and pensions and things along those lines. So that is my background. That's what I've been doing. And about 14 years ago, I started my own firm to help employers make wise decisions about the plans that they provide their employees.
So what had you done prior to starting that company? Who did you work for? Did you work for some big companies?
Yeah, I did. I worked for some of the larger companies in the industry, and then some boutique firms as well, kind of honing my skills and seeing what else was out there.
And what was your background? Were you a financial planner? Were you an accountant? How did you get into the field?
How did I get into the field? I graduated in 2001 and I needed a job, and I did not want to live in my parents' basement. So that ended up being a job in insurance that I took. And we were helping school teachers with their retirement as well as insurance. I loved the retirement part and the investments and helping people understand kind of complex subjects and how to best use their employee retirement plan. And so I looked for other opportunities where I could just stay in that area and hone my skills. So yeah, one thing led to another.
Okay, so a couple of things. First of all, so do you only represent employers, or do you also represent or help out self-employed people, small businesses? Who do you help?
Yeah, we work with small businesses up to large businesses. I would say that we are most useful in the small to medium-sized space for companies. And one of the benefits that we offer if they're using us to help with the plan is to talk to the employees and help them make better decisions as well. So we do work with them with employees from the standpoint of helping them figure out how to understand their plan, appreciate it, use it to its best extent in their situation.
Now, you're not a plan administrator, correct? You don't administer the plans. You just help get them set up. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, we help in a couple of different ways. So the first is helping the employer figure out which vendors to go with. You know, a lot of people know Fidelity or Vanguard or some of the larger names like that. And sometimes those are a great fit for plans of their size, and sometimes it's not. So we help to figure out who the best service providers are. Then we help with being there as a sounding board for how the plan should be designed, because every company has a reason that they're offering these plans. So, you know, you're spending a lot of time and money on it. You want to get the objective fulfilled there. So we help draft the plan in the way of choosing how it should be set up. And then that leads over, of course, into the how we educate the employees about it. And the big part, of course, is that we are a registered investment advisory firm. And so we are overseeing the investments that go into the plan. And And so that's our big function. But we're basically subject matter experts.
Now, we're basically only concentrating exclusively on retirement, or is there other type of plans that you're working with?
Straight up retirement plans, corporate sponsored retirement plans. Now, we do work with a lot of different companies. We get asked opinions about benefits and other things from time to time. So we can offer a little insight on that. But our main bread and butter comes from helping employers with that retirement plan that they're offering.
Now, you mentioned the word corporation. So is it exclusively to corporations and limited liability companies? Or can somebody that has a DBA but has 12 people working at the company, do you help those companies out as well?
Absolutely. So I guess organizations is probably a better word to use, because we have some nonprofit folks. We also have for-profit, you know, corporations, LLCs. It runs the gamut.
Now, I'm going to guess the most popular plan out there today is the 401k, or are there other plans that are just as popular?
No.
What is the most popular plan?
You guessed it. It's definitely the 401k plan these days.
Now, do you work with SIP IRAs or all self-employed person IRAs?
So we don't, but we will often help companies who, you know, they don't know what plan is right for them, to work through those decisions as well in the SIP IRA or a simple IRA. Often those are really good for that smaller space, the smaller employers, and they're less liability. You put on your legal hat there. They have less fiduciary liability than the 401k does, because everybody gets to invest their own money in their own IRA. Whereas once you get up into 401k land, then you've got this fiduciary responsibility to oversee the investments that are in the plan and offered.
So give us the top four type of plans. We got the 401k, and then what are the three other common or most popular plans that you work with?
Well, so if you're a smaller employer, then you ought to be looking at some sort of IRA plan, a SEP IRA or a simple IRA. Then you start moving into 401k or 403b. If you are a nonprofit, like alphabet soup over here, it's a bunch of tax codes. That's the worst marketing effort ever. Like, let's call a retirement plan by its tax code. That's awful. But the 401k, the 403b, and then I would say after that is you'll see some cash balance plans and defined benefit plans out there. But those are a little bit different beasts. Those are more heavily, well, the employer is more responsible for those and funding those, whereas like 401k and the others that I named are where the employee is responsible for funding a lot of it too.
I don't want to spend too much time, but not everybody knows what these plans are. So let's try to go quickly, not too long, but so people understand. I mean, people know about the 401k, but they don't know about even the SIP IRAs and the simple plans. So go over what those are quickly.
Okay, sure. So the simple IRA is exactly what it sounds like. It's a group plan. It's simple. It's easy to administer. The limit for this year, let's see, for 2024, the maximum a person can put in is $16,000. And the employer has to put in a contribution as well. So they can either do that as a gift, basically, or a match as a small amount. The SEP IRA, that stands for Simplified Employee Pension. And that one, the maximum, so this is really good for like self-employed people or like family-owned business, very small. So they have a much higher maximum that they can put in. But what you do for yourself in those plans, you have to do for everybody else as well. So the maximum employer contribution for that is $69,000 this year. But if you're giving yourself $69,000, you usually have to give your employees that much too. So when you get into the 401k space, the most that a person, an employee can put in this year is $23,000 with their own money. If they're turning age 50 or older, then they can do up to $30,500. And then the employer has this ability to put extra in on top. And the total amount that can go into the plan between what the employee and employer puts in is $69,000. So it's structured differently though. Like the 401k plan or even the 403b, you can do a matching contribution as the employer. You can do what we call a non-elective or just a gift, thank you for working here contribution. You can also do what's called a profit sharing contribution at the end of the year. So that's why 401ks are popular, is because they have more flexibility in how they're able to be run. But as we all know, the IRS, what they give, they take away. So if they're giving you all these options, there are quite a few hoops that you have to jump through. You have tax filings and non-discrimination testing that you have to do with the plan. So does that help clear that up a little bit?
It did, but there are still some things here. So first of all, when you say that if you have one of these plans that you have to give the same amount to all the people that are working there, I mean, if somebody's making $200,000 a year and somebody's making $40,000 a year, is it just a percentage of that or do you have to give the same amount?
Hey, good catch on that. Yeah, it's a percentage. It's a percentage. So if you're giving yourself a high percentage, you give everybody else a high percentage too.
And basically everyone, you can decide what percentage you can contribute. Is it like 0 to 20% or is there a maximum number and a minimum number?
Are you talking about the SEP IRA? Is that what we're talking about?
Well, yeah, we can go over, start out with the SEPs and then go into the 401s and all the others. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So on the SEP, the maximum employer contribution for a participant is $69,000. So you're going to work with your accountant and they're going to be the ones that tell you how much you can put in based on your income as the owner. And then you can start making decisions from there as far as how much you give everyone else as well, based on what your situation is. So those are really good plans to work with your accountant on to get them to figure out the contributions and what you're allowed to do so that you don't run afoul of some of the IRS rules there. For the simple IRA, the maximum that anybody can put in is $16,000. And that match is kind of a fixed situation, the match or the employer contribution. So there's really not a lot of flexibility in the simple IRA, but everybody can put in that maximum of $16,000. We jump into the 401k plan. So there, it's every person is deciding how much, every employee is deciding how much they want to contribute out of their own paycheck into the plan. They can choose to participate. They can choose to opt out. You are in control of saving for your own retirement in the 401k plan. And then on top of that, your employer may choose to give you a match. They may choose to give you a profit sharing contribution, that sort of thing. And the rules around that are a little bit more complex, I think, for our show today. But basically, just knowing that employees can put in what they want to, up to a maximum of $23,000 or $30,500 if they're turning age 50. And then the employer has wiggle room above that. So the most that the employee could receive between their money and the employer's money is $69,000. So that could be a percentage. It could be a flat dollar amount that the company puts in on their behalf. They've got a lot of flexibility in how that works.
So what if you have a profit sharing plan and you sell to Apple Computer for $1 billion and there's a lot of money from that profit sharing? I mean, how does that work? You're going to exceed the contribution amount, I presume, right?
I'm not sure I followed your question. Could you say that one more time? I'm sorry.
Okay, so you have a profit sharing plan, okay? And in the profit sharing plan, you sell your company sold for $1 billion, okay? And you only have 10 employees, all right? So a percentage of that, it goes into the profit sharing plan, but there's a maximum number. So how does that work out if there's a maximum number and the amount of the profit sharing exceeds that?
Well, IRS has limits. So as a business owner, you would probably have to figure out some other way to distribute that money to your employees if that's what you wanted to do. And I think it's important to distinguish the difference between a profit sharing plan in general versus what's available inside the 401k plan. So if it's a 401k profit sharing plan, then you're either going to give everybody the same percentage or you could give them the same amount, or you could employ some of the actuarial options that would allow you to either single out certain groups and try to give them a little bit more based on age, based on wages or social security. I don't really want to go down that road because it's pretty complicated.
All right. Tracy, you there?
Yes, but my goodness. Woo. All right. That was exciting. That was an exciting way to come back. Yay.
Woo. Well, we're going to give you a shot.
Yeah, I think you've taken a shot. I'm just not sure what of. Okay, so Courtney, what I really want to make sure that we get into is talking about how all of this is tied into benefits for the employee, benefits for the employer, and can you help us flush some of those details out?
Yes, and thank goodness, because you're about to have like the most boring
show, I think, of all time, if I was going to reel off any more numbers.
No. I just want to say, though, that I'm glad you shared those numbers, because there's a lot of confusion around it. Even when you talk to your financial advisor, you talk to your accountant, one sends you to your accountant, the accountant sends you back to your financial advisor. So I think it's great that you shared those numbers. So just kudos to you. But also the benefits, too, I think are important.
Well, it's kind of like what you were just talking about, where you get sent to different places and, you know, you start getting into the alphabet soup and all the different limits and what's this and who's that. And the most important thing for businesses to be thinking about and business owners to be thinking about is, why are you putting this plan in place even to begin with? And we see in our practice that in helping business owners figure this out, a lot of times it comes back to their own situation. Like, they have invested everything they've got for the last 10 years into their business, just trying to build it, get those clients in the door, make it profitable, all the things. And they're like, oh yeah, I think I might need to retire someday. And I want to also save for that besides just selling my business someday. And so that's one thing. We also hear, I've got a tax problem. I need to figure something out. I want to benefit my employees and myself. And also, you know, I don't necessarily want to just pay all this out in tax money. Then we also hear, okay, I can't hire anybody unless I've got a retirement plan. They're all asking me about what is our 401k offering or whatever. And so it's a recruitment and retention tool that employers really need to consider. And so having that, like, why does this plan exist? What are we trying to accomplish with it? Is probably the most important thing that we work through with our clients and helping them suss that out, and then figuring out what's the right plan, or have they outgrown the plan that they have currently?
In that arena of questions, if you will, about benefits and recruitment, what is the smallest size of a company that you would work with? Is that like the founder is set up as an employee in their payroll and maybe has one other person on payroll? Or is there a minimum number of employees that need to be considered on payroll? Like, oh, because a lot of the reason I'm wanting clarification around this is a lot of entrepreneurs will build their businesses with 1099 independent contractors initially for multiple benefits to them as startups. And a lot of our audience are in that startup phase. So when should a business start to plan for this?
They should definitely start to plan for this as soon as it makes sense to the owner to do it. It's just who you're going to go to get help. Like, if you come to our firm, then you should probably have 10 to 15, 20, you know, you should be employees and be growing, because otherwise we're just going to be overkill for what they need. In many cases, if they're really small, there's just like one or two employees at this point in time, a financial advisor or maybe even your accounting firm might have a relationship with a wealth manager or something like that. That's going to be a really good place to start. As you get larger, as the plan gets fairly large, as you get more employees that are coming on board that you need retirement planology, or somebody like us who's a specialist in this field who can make sure that you're following all the rules with regards to like making the plan worth it, and solving those problems about like, okay, we only have so much money to spend on our benefits package. Like, how do we move this around? How do we make sure our employees value the health insurance, the disability, all the other things that are all part of this package? And so we typically see that happening in larger situations. So like 10 employees on their way up to 20, somewhere in that range. But financial advisor is a great place to go. A lot of the smaller, or excuse me, the payroll companies now are forming relationships with 401k offerings. And so for the micro-sized business, those are great. They're often very turnkey and reduce the amount of administration that goes into the plan because they have a lot of automated features. So something like that would be great for that micro-sized, you know, before you get to that 10, 15, 20 employee mark. Does that help?
Yes, definitely. And so tell me about your ideal client then, outside of just the number of employees. Like, who is your target person that is like your ideal client that you would like to work with?
Absolutely. So they are a growing company. They're trying to hire. They're trying to retain. They're also a little paranoid. They're wearing too many hats. They need somebody to help take the work off their plate and manage the plan for them. They're also probably struggling where they are capital constrained, shall we say. So they only have so many dollars and want to spend it really wisely. And then they also want their employees to have another resource where they can go to make sure that they're making the right decisions, because oftentimes they're just not sure if their employees have the education that they need in order to make those wise decisions about their financial future. So that's our ideal client.
That is really great that you have. I think it's so important to take away from that question and for our audience is to really identify who your target market is, to know who it is that you want to work with and is a good fit for you, and also to be just as clear about who is not a fit of who you want to work for. And that applies to any industry, to any business, right?
You got it. Definitely. Definitely.
You have clearly identified who your target market is. How do you market for lead generation for your business to reach that target market?
Okay, so nobody really Googles like, oh, I've got millions of dollars. Let's pick a firm to manage it, right? But we don't spend any money on Google Ads, but we do have a lot of content on our website, retirementplanology.com. And the reason that we put so much out there is because we want our folks to be, we want to establish trust, quite frankly, with folks that might want to work with us. And if we're helping to like at least partially answer their question, or at least, you know, show that we have the knowledge and skill set that they need, I think that's step one. So we use a lot of online marketing on LinkedIn, and then also our website, podcasts like this, you know, where we're answering those important questions and maybe presenting information in a way that they haven't heard it before, guiding them back to our website at retirementplanology/learn more. That's a place where they can book a call with us or, you know, get access to some of the other resources that we have on the website for smaller businesses, especially. And then all of our other marketing pretty much comes from word of mouth. So we spend a lot of time with like outsourced human resources or outsourced or fractional CFOs in establishing those relationships, because 9 times out of 10, when a business owner is like, hey, who should we get for our retirement plan? They're going to ask somebody who's in a position like that. So when you're thinking about how to market your own business, it's so important to figure out who those centers of influence are, how your customer is even looking for what you do. And in our case, a lot of times we get broken plans. Like we're being referred in because they've outgrown their current advisor. They don't know how to solve their problems any longer. They feel like something's not right. They've seen some warning signs and they need help. They need extra help. And so that's, you know, where we come in as that subject matter expert rather than the generalist.
Well, I just want to personally say, coming from someone who owns a podcast production agency, Producer Podcast, yes, shameless plug, that I am really excited to hear you mention that guesting on other podcasts and doing radio shows is a really efficient and successful marketing tool for you, because I do believe that it's very powerful for people to be able to hear your story and also just hear your expertise and be able, you know, you can get SEO content on websites, like you're saying, and I think that's really important. But I love that your marketing model is really diversified so that people can actually get to know your subject matter expertise and how you run your business and talk about your business. And I just think that that's really important from a credibility perspective, especially when you're dealing with managing people's money and benefits for their employees.
Yeah, it's a pretty complex space too. And so, you know, one of the things that we hang our hat on is just being approachable about it and helping people make smart decisions without all the jargon and all the craziness. I know we spent a lot of time talking about limits and different types of plans and things, but, you know, being able to boil it down to the important concepts and being able to communicate that not just to businesses and business owners, but also their employees and how they should be thinking about this plan, because everybody wants the luxury of deciding how they spend their time later in life. And in order to do that, they're going to have to figure out how to make a paycheck if they don't want to show up to work every day. So that's where that retirement plan comes in. And it's such an important part of the culture of the employer, as well as, you know, part of that benefits package.
I think it's very important for business owners to be thinking about, like, it's great to be thinking about how it benefits your employees from a recruitment perspective, but it also, yes, how do you, you know, that's such an important point. It's like, if you don't want to keep doing the day-to-day grind, you better be making alternative plans, right?
You got it. You got it.
Really quickly before our break, how does your business model work? Are you a fee-based consultant? How does it, when someone comes to you, how do you charge and how do you monetize your business?
Yeah, so we are fee-based. We don't have to sell a product in order to get paid. We just sell knowledge, basically, to get paid. And it's going to depend on the needs of the client, obviously. You know, how much of our time and effort and services do they need? But also, how large is the plan? As the plan goes up in size, then it becomes more risky from a legal standpoint. And so that is a component of our pricing. But basically, yeah, it could be a flat fee that they're paying, or it could be an asset-based fee that they're paying. Yeah, so that's how we monetize things.
So Courtney, and what would be the best way for someone who's listening today to continue the conversation with you and find out more information about engaging your services?
Yeah, they can go to Retirement Planology, that's Planology, retirementplanology.com/learn more. And there's a whole bunch of content and resources available. There's also a place where you can book a call to touch base on what you're thinking about or bounce ideas. So that would be probably the best place. I'm also on LinkedIn, and on LinkedIn, of course, you know, we put out a lot of content there as well, fun ideas and updated changes and regulatory this and whatever else. So that would be a good place too.
Okay, everybody. So you heard it here first, retirementplanology.com, or connect with Courtney on LinkedIn. And if for whatever reason you need to reference this back, be sure to check out our podcast, which is the radio show released on demand, so that you can get access to all this amazing information that was shared today and in our previous episodes. The podcast is Ask Brian. That's A-S-K-B-R-I-E-N. And you can find it wherever you listen to your favorite podcast, and make us one of your favorite podcasts, because, hey, we're worth it. And you can find us on Apple, Spotify, iHeart, and we would love it if you checked out the podcast and gave us one of those really fun 5-star reviews and liked us and commented us, but even more important, share it with your friends.
Well, Peter? Thank you very much, Tracy. So, Courtney, the big question that we wanted to know is, you've been in business now for a few years, and we want to know, what was the biggest challenge you've had to deal with?
So there are several challenges along the way. I won the lottery on bad bosses, which is why I went into business for myself. So that was the first thing, because I thought, you know what, if these idiots can do it, so can I. So that was one challenge to overcome. The second is that as a young female, I do not look like most financial advisors. And so walking into a room where I'm, you know, talking to folks and they're not expecting to see somebody like me relaying the information, I felt like I had to work twice as hard at being knowledgeable and making sure that I really knew my stuff every single time. So I felt like the bar was just much higher for me than it was maybe for somebody who they were expecting to see. So that was probably my biggest challenge that I've had to overcome. And we've won clients because of that. We've lost out on clients because of it as well. So, but you know, I am who I am. I show up the way I am. So that's that.
So what's been your biggest success?
Biggest success? Oh, gosh, just staying in business for 10 years. it's hard, as every entrepreneur knows. There are days where you want to quit, and there's days that you have been sent over the moon. You just feel like you're bouncing from one end of the spectrum to the other, I think, on success and failure. So I guess my one piece of advice out there is, whenever you do feel like quitting, just say, okay, I'm allowed to quit, but maybe just not today. Maybe I'll wait till tomorrow, and just, see how you feel in the morning. Because a lot of times those crushing blows aren't quite so crushing when looked at it in perspective after a good night's sleep.
So I do have one more thing, and that is, it's brought up now by this success issue. So during COVID, right, how did you get new clients? Mm-hmm.
We just kept doing the same thing we've been doing, to be quite honest. And we relied on our touching base with our referral sources. And we had already started doing a lot of video online as well for content. And we just kept up that same thing. So I didn't have a magic bullet. We just kept on doing what we were doing and made sure that we were still in the online space for it.
All right. Well, thank you very much. We appreciate your interview today. Tracy, thank you very much. Courtney, thank you very much. And
thank you.
You listen to KHS 1220 and 98.1 FM, the Ask Brian Radio Show. Over and out.
Thank you for tuning in to the Ask Brian Radio Show. You can listen to us every Thursday on KTHS AM 1220 and FM 98.1, or via Facebook Live, or anytime, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Visit AskBrian.com to join the conversation and ask us your business questions, and we'll answer them on our next episode. That's AskBrian.com.